This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
What guest do we have today? Oh, RJ Bell, his 2-7 record on the season, joins us at 10. And if there's any college football left to talk about by 10:30 this morning, Paul Feinbaum will join us to break it all down. I mean, every time I go on Twitter, this game's canceled, that game's canceled. Nothing's happening.
Yeah, I mean, canceled, postponed. I mean, the Ivy League has shut down winter sports.
Yep.
It's a mess right now.
It is. And we really haven't talked about, like, and good morning, Chris. Before we even start, let's say good morning. It's a football Friday. Good morning, Chris Canty. How are you?
Good morning, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I should have taken the Colts last night. I liked them, and I was stupid because I get nervous on these Thursday night games, and I didn't take them, and now I sit here at 0-0 heading into the weekend. But I'm okay.
It felt like everybody and their mama was on the Titans, though.
Which is the exact reason that I like the Colts.
Is that right?
Well, because it made no sense. It made no sense that the spread was a pick'em going into that game.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, the Titans' defense is really, really bad. And the Colts are a better all-around team, and they showed it last night by a wide margin.
Well, I don't know if they're a better all-around team, Dave. I mean, I just think that the Colts' special teams, that third phase of the game, is what dominated. That was a disastrous third quarter for the Titans. I mean, up until that point, it felt like the Titans were in control. I mean, the Colts had four drives of 10 plays or more that ended in a total of 6 points. So, I mean, the Titans played that bend but don't break style of defense, but their special teams let them down, man. You had a shank punt that gave the Colts the ball at the 27-yard line. They ended up punching that in. And then you had the block punt for a touchdown on the very next possession. I mean, that was a huge swing. You talk about being up 4 points to having a double-digit deficit.
Yep.
And with an offense like the Titans, they're not going to play from behind.
Yeah.
That was the story of the game.
No, I agree. I mean,
I always say kickers aren't football players. People need to understand that applies to punters too.
Yeah, that was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Rick, did you see the story with the punter that they just brought him in this week and he showed up for the interview in his FedEx uniform?
Did he really?
You didn't hear that story?
Yep, I heard that story. Yep.
Yep.
Guess who's not going to be using FedEx anymore? The Tennessee Titans.
Yeah. No, that was
the old 17-yarder, little shank punt.
That was bad. And you saw it. You watched the replay. Went right off the side of his
head. I will say this, though. I'm mad, too, because I like the Colts. The only reason I didn't take the Colts in that game is because Phillip Rivers still scares the hell out of me.
And he should. How many times do you watch the game, and there's a guy wide open, he hesitates, and then he waits till he's covered, and then he throws it at that guy? It happens all the time with him.
Yeah, he makes me nervous.
Yeah.
Because their defense is really good.
Very good.
They're well coached. They got really good defense. I mean, all three phases are good. I just, for some reason, Phillip Rivers still makes me a little bit nervous.
He should
make you nervous, Rick, but when he's getting the ball out of his hands quickly, that's the Phillip Rivers that you want to, you know, and love. Like, that's the guy when he's going to be at his best. Like, I want to say last night he averaged 2.3 seconds from snap to throw. And when he got the ball out of his hands in less than 2.5 seconds, he was 22 or 25.
He just looks so awkward doing it, though. I mean,
he's
like,
but he has for his career.
He's got that sidearm delivery. It's funky, man. But he's had that since NC State, dude.
Yeah, he's always done that.
No, but it reminds me of Uncle Rico. Every time I watch him play, it reminds me of Uncle Rico throwing the ball around.
A successful Uncle Rico.
A successful. Well, yeah. You know, I mean, Uncle Rico in high school. I mean, don't sleep on that.
No, we've heard stories, but this is a much higher level that Phillip Rivers
is succeeding
at.
Throw that football over that mountain.
So now that's they go to 6-3. The Titans are 6-3. I mean, the loaded AFC continues to make me look good in my preseason prediction.
Yeah, but the Titans ain't going far if they can't find a field goal kicker and they can't find a punter.
Yeah, and I'm not impressed with their defense by any stretch.
Yeah, their defense is not very good. Yeah.
And A.J. Brown only had one catch, too, which doesn't help.
I don't understand. He's so dynamic.
I love him.
That would drive me crazy.
That team just looks – I mean, that team is one of those teams that gets off the bus and you feel like you could be a little bit intimidated because – I mean, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Their wide receivers are big. Running back's a beast.
Well, the
their
running
tight
back
end is
would
big.
Just scare you to death.
I mean, they moved their first drive. I mean, they went right down the field. And I actually really like that play on the touchdown where they had Derrick Henry lined up more like a fullback.
Mm-hmm.
That was a nice play, too. But
it was a nice play.
Chris is right. That team's like the Ravens. They get behind. They're hard-pressed to throw themselves back into the game. But to your credit, Dave, you did say, without ever knowing, having any idea, the AFC was going to be loaded.
But you got to give me credit at this point. I mean, the AFC is loaded.
I mean, currently the AFC does look
Just admit that I was right. For one time, just say, you know what, you were right. The AFC is loaded. With Baltimore and Pittsburgh City and Buffalo. Come on, it's loaded.
We got to give them credit, Rico. I mean, we're at week 10 and they've got five teams that have got six wins or more. So, got to give them credit.
Thank you. I'll take
such a hard time. Such a hard time giving you credit for that.
I know.
No
you
idea at the time. You was actually. It was actually. You slipped up when you said it, and then you just rode with it, and now it turns out you're right.
And by the way, I'm very involved in the golf today, so if I'm not 100%
focused, in the golf right now. Don't you guys talk amongst yourselves?
I got Fratelli is blowing past this course here.
Yeah, it's ripe. It's ripe to be taken advantage of right now with the conditions.
Tiger should have 4 under. Augusta.
Tiger should. I love what Tiger did yesterday too.
He was great yesterday.
He looked fantastic yesterday. It concerns me a little bit though now because he's going to tee off so late in the afternoon. He's only going to probably get in 9 holes. And then he's going to have to get up early and finish his second round, which I don't like for his back.
So he goes into the day knowing he will not complete the second round.
I think he tees off at 2:30. He's not
going
to get it.
Stinks.
I mean, it's going to be dark by
4:15.
He's going to have what, 3 hours to golf?
No, 2 hours.
2 hours? I'm hoping Justin Thomas wins. I like Tiger, but I'm hoping Justin Thomas wins this.
Yeah, but I hope Tiger is at least relevant going into Sunday.
I think everybody does. Hey, and by the way, as big a freak as Tom Brady is playing at 43 and Drew Brees is, and I get it, you know, golf is different than football, Bernhard Langer could be the biggest freak of all time.
This is the same Langer that I like watched when I was 10?
He's 63 years old, Dave.
Oh, my God.
63, and he dominates the Champions Tour. Dominates it. It's unbelievable.
And what is he now? I saw he's 4 under this morning?
He doesn't age.
Yeah, good for him.
It's like a vampire.
I didn't realize this was, I thought this was his kid.
No, this is him.
This is still him?
This is still him. The guy he can't stop. Just cannot stop.
Good for him. Was it Tom Watson, like, I don't know, 8-10 years ago now, that was leading going into the final round of the Open Championship?
Yes. Yeah, these are the two tournaments. The older players, because you get familiar with the course, and the Masters is played at the same course every single year. It's usually the Open and in the Masters that the older golfers have a chance to actually win.
Mickelson with a birdie, 4 under.
Mickelson looks good, too. I've been drinking his coffee, by the way, his wellness coffee. And I got to say, I think it's had a positive effect on my reads. I'm just saying.
On your reads?
On my reads.
Hmm.
Since I started doing it, I feel like my reads are a little bit crisper than usual.
I'll have to really put them under the microscope moving forward because I wasn't analyzing them, realizing that they were being affected by a wellness product.
Yeah, but notice you've said, I mean, I'm not sure you're keeping track of this. You have recently, over the last month, numerous occasions where you said, that's a gorgeous read.
Yeah, I did, and I don't know whether I meant it or whether I was just trying to boost your ego. I'll have to really...
You're lying to me now. That's what
I know how to, you know, as the point guard of the show, I'm dishing to you, I'm dishing to you. I want to make you guys look good. I want to set you up for alley-oops. And by me once in a while saying, boy, that was some read there, Rick. That's good for you. That makes you, that keeps you engaged.
That's what we're doing. The old high pick and roll on the reads going into the breaks.
Listen, it's important to keep everybody very focused. We have 2 hours that we have
good
to.
Good point. It's a sprint.
It's a sprint.
It's a sprint.
It's the Ben Johnson of sports talk shows. The Usain Bolt.
Did I mention I hate Fridays, by the way? Did I mention that yet?
Why do you hate Fridays?
You're the only person in the world that hates Fridays.
I dislike Fridays because
why?
I have to make my picks. Because I have to make my picks today, and I had them all written down last night. And then, like an idiot, I start watching everything this morning, and I talk myself into different picks. It's a mess.
No.
It ruins my entire
You know what
weekend.
You have to do. Either you have, there's two options you can go with. Whatever your first choices are, you stick with them, or whatever RJ Bell does, you go the other way.
Yeah, but he's a professional. At some point, doesn't he have to turn this thing around? At some point, you feel like
yeah, I would figure yes, but is that point now?
Like I loved your picks last week. I actually found myself after the show with your picks. I was like, God, I think Dave's going to go 3-0. I really like his picks. I loved your picks actually.
I did also, and I look at them now, and I still like them. Minnesota -4, Detroit, they killed them. Arizona -4.5 against Miami. They should have won. Tua was better than I thought, so I'll give him credit for that. So that doesn't anger me. The Chargers pick them against the Raiders. That should have been a win.
Yeah, you say that, but how many close games have the Chargers lost this
all
season,
of them.
Dave? Exactly.
That's all they do.
So that's on you. So if you think that it's going to be a pick 'em, by the nature of it, it's going to be a close game.
You're right about
that. The Chargers
that.
Usually don't come out on the winning end of those. So why
did you
pick that game?
I can't take the Chargers ever again.
Now, that being said, I actually like the Chargers down in Miami this weekend.
Really?
I do. I'm not going to mess with the game, but I do like the Chargers.
That's so weird because I look at that and I'm like, what am I missing here? Like, what's Miami fair by, like two and a half in this game?
I think it's a point.
It's a point now?
It's a point and a half, yeah, point and a half now.
See, I look at that and my initial thought is I really like Miami, but then when I step back, I'm like, no, it's gonna be the Chargers. So I don't know, but I'm done with the Chargers. I'm not taking them again this season.
Yeah, the way you feel about the Chargers is how I feel about the Giants. I won't pick the Giants again this season.
Let's get into the Giants. I'm glad you said that. See, we're so simpatico. We were just about to dive into the Giants. He mentioned the Giants. Now we run through that. It's another week that you look at the Giants. You're like, this is a huge game, and I can't believe that it is a huge game because at 2-7, you shouldn't have huge games. But listen, Washington stinks. Dallas is awful. The Giants and Eagles, you could argue, are the two best teams in this division. Giants had them the first time. They completely collapsed in that game. Guys, if the Giants win this game, like it or not, they have a legitimate chance to make a run at this division down the stretch here.
Yeah, it's a huge game. I mean, but at a certain point, Daniel Jones and this Giants team needs to prove to everyone that he can beat a team that's not named the Washington Football Team.
Where he has one win, right?
He beat Tampa, but the Eagles have dominated the Giants. They won.
Yeah, 12 out of the last 13. Yeah.
So this is it. And you should have won. I mean, let's face it. I mean, you should have won the game in Philadelphia.
Oh, it was over.
It was over.
It was over. It was one Evan Engram catch away from being over.
Yeah, but you have to be excited, don't you? I mean, this is it.
Yeah, but you know what?
You can be nervous, but you have to be excited.
I am excited, but here's the thing. You can go from a win and, oh, my God, you're 3-7. You're half game behind Philadelphia. There's no and Philly has a really tough schedule the second half of the season. There's no reason you can't win this division. And that's if you win. If you lose, we're 2-8. We can't beat Philadelphia, and there's no reason we don't have a top three pick in this coming draft. Like, this game sends you on one road, which is completely optimistic, and one road, at least for me, which is completely pessimistic.
And you hate to set it up like that, Dave, but that's just what it is. Because, you know, a couple of years ago you decided that you were going to take a quarterback with the 6th overall pick. And at some point, that guy's got to get you on the other side of these kind of games. And having an 11-point lead in Philadelphia, a division rival, in the fourth quarter and not being able to win that game, not being able to pull that one out, that brings into question whether or not Daniel Jones will ever be able to get it done. Now, it's still relatively early in his career, and it's going to be his 23rd start. But I just feel like in this situation, this is one of those games, two evenly matched teams, you're looking for your quarterback to be the difference. And at this point, Daniel Jones needs to be the difference in a positive way and not a negative way against somebody not named the Washington Football Team. Like, that's where it is for me.
Yeah. Well, I think we're all in agreement with that.
I'm actually really excited for this game. That sounds crazy when you look at the records, but I think this is going to be – This is a huge test.
This is a huge game for the Giants. And you say win a game, not just not lose it, but win a game. I mean, let's be honest, Chris. How many games have you watched of Daniel Jones in his granted young career where you said he won that game? Last year's really meaningful. The Tampa game,
yeah.
and the Washington game at the end where he had the 5 touchdowns, yeah. And everybody got so crazy. Other than that, I mean, are they winning games because of him?
No, I wouldn't say that they won that game last week because of him in Washington. That was because of the defense being able to create turnovers and the offensive line doing a good job with the running game. Like, to me, those were the differences. Now, Daniel Jones did make a couple of nice throws in there, including that touchdown to Evan Engram. But at some point, he's got to be a force multiplier, man. It's not just not turning the football over, but actually making some plays for your team. And he did that the last time they played the Eagles. I mean, he had that long 80-yard run.
Yep.
I mean, you know, he set up a scoring opportunity there. So it's not like we haven't seen Daniel Jones make plays, but make the plays and then actually have that resulting to the team winning. That's been a different story. I mean, we got to get more wins in there, Dave.
I firmly agree with you. But just to whet the appetite, just to show Rick how this is such a huge game, can I give you the next 5 Eagles games after this week?
Yeah, please do.
They're at the Browns.
Yep.
Which is not an easy game. They play the Seahawks, which is a game you would imagine they probably won't win. They're at the Packers, which is a game that you think they probably won't win. They host the Saints, which is a game you think they probably won't win. And they go to Arizona. I mean, you could argue that if they lose this game to the Giants on Sunday, if they go 1-4, it's very realistic in their next five. And there's no reason the Giants, six wins, whatever it is, couldn't win this division.
I don't disagree with you. The only thing I will say about the Philadelphia Eagles is they're starting to get healthy.
You're right.
So you could see a different team.
Which scares me
about this game, but with the caveat, I mean, the same things that we were saying about Philip Rivers are the exact same things that concern me about Carson Wentz. He's been a turnover machine.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, and the Giants have been one of the better teams in the NFL at creating turnovers. Right?
Absolutely.
And that's all it takes in a game like this.
Yeah.
I mean, last game was a one-point game in Philly.
When you're up by 11. I mean, you were the better team last game. You were.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is a prime opportunity to, in, I would imagine it's probably going to look a lot like it looked last week, is that, you know, you're going to try to establish the run. You'll play good defense. Daniel Jones will make a couple throws here and there, and as long as he doesn't turn the football over, you'll be right in this game. I mean, there's only been one game the entire season the Giants haven't been in.
Yeah, there's no reason to think they won't be in this game. They're in every, outside of the blip, which you have to say is the outlier now, against San Francisco, they're in every single game.
Yeah, you're right. They're in every single game, but they're finding themselves on the losing side of most of them. So at some point, something about that has to change, and this week will be a good opportunity for it. And, Dave, when you start talking about the remaining schedules, and I know Philly has a tough schedule, the Giants don't have an easy schedule. I mean, you got the bye week, and then you're on the road against Cincinnati and Seattle, home against Arizona, Cleveland, on the road against Baltimore. The only gimme that you have is week 17 at home against the Cowboys. So, I mean, this is one of those things. Like, if you're going to be a team that's going to make a run at winning this division, it has to start with winning this game. Because if you don't,
absolutely,
you're talking about having a top five pick.
No. And we've said it, and I've said it like five times, and then I come back and I'm like, well, if they don't win. If they do not win this game, the season, as far as any semblance of hope for a postseason berth, is over. You're 2-8. You still have really tough teams. You have Seattle, you have Baltimore. You're going to wind up winning three games, maybe if things go well, four.
Yeah.
So that's it. This is unequivocally the end of the season. And that's why I say this is such an important game.
But not just for the team, but for Daniel Jones. Because, like you said, there are one or two roads that you can go down. I think his career can go down one or two roads. And if he wins this game and the Giants are in the conversation for winning the NFC East once the calendar hits December, then you're probably talking about him being your starting quarterback going into 2021 unequivocally. But if he doesn't, then you're probably talking about using, you know, the draft capital that the Giants have on another quarterback. That's where it is right now, Dave.
So think of the magnitude of this game, Chris. We're talking about it sets you up to have any chance or no chance at this division this year.
Mm-hmm.
It maybe defines the future of your quarterback. I mean, you could argue that this is the biggest game this franchise has played in a very long time, and they're sitting here at 2-7 entering this football game.
And here's the other part about that too, Dave. It's not only your quarterback's future, but it's your general manager's future too. I mean, Dave Gettleman was a guy coming into this season that John Mara said he's got to improve his batting average. That's not a good thing when the owner is calling out the general manager saying that he has to get better. Now, to Gettleman's credit, we like some of the moves that he's made this offseason, especially on the defensive side of the ball, because that seems to be the unit that's overperforming based on our expectations of him coming into this year. But even with that being said, I mean, Dave Gettleman has had a lot of high draft picks and not really a whole lot of winning to show for it. So, I mean, at some point, something about that has to change as well. And if Daniel Jones can't prove definitively that he's your guy after 2 years and what will amount to, what, 29 starts? Like, at that point, it's just like, you know what? We probably got to do something different at the quarterback position.
Yeah, one thing, too, I will say, because, I mean, again, it's how teams view young quarterbacks now is it's different. I mean, let's face it. I mean, they're playing sooner, and teams are making decisions on whether or not they feel like they can be the franchise quarterbacks a lot quicker than they have in the past. And I think, you know, it's on Daniel Jones, and the reason why this is so important is don't give the Giants the opportunity to draft another quarterback. Because the reason why you would draft another quarterback, the reason why the Jets will draft Trevor Lawrence with the first overall pick, you're projecting ceilings. And if you look at Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, their ceilings are higher than Sam Darnold's and Daniel Jones's.
Yep.
Yes.
And that's what you're drafting. So don't give them the opportunity to do that. This wouldn't even be a conversation if the Giants weren't in a position where they could have the second overall pick because they keep losing football games.
But look at the games that he directly cost them. I mean, that Tampa Bay game, he lost that game. Right? I mean, there's a lot of the seven losses that are on him. He has had, in every game, he's had moments where you shake your head, you go, hey, here we go again. So you're right, but at some point, he's got to step up and make us not question him and make us believe that, you know what, they may not have a great record, but this is a team that has the right quarterback.
The one thing that concerns me, Dave, and that makes me question whether or not he's capable of doing it, is the turnovers, man. I mean, the guy has shown that he's turnover prone, and that's something that goes back to his time at Duke. And it's not like we're talking about a small sample size at Duke. He started for 3 years. So, I mean, you saw turnovers there. You've seen turnovers in the first year and a half of his career. If that's something that continues through the stretch of this next seven games, then you have to question whether or not he's capable of getting on the other side of that, at least to the point where it doesn't cost your team the opportunity to win games. I know we've seen quarterbacks around the National Football League turn the ball over a lot in their first three seasons. But with a lot of those guys that last, the turnovers aren't the reason that their teams are losing. In fact, those teams actually start getting it turned around and start winning and becoming competitive and getting into the postseason. The Giants are far away from that right now. And so when you use the sixth overall pick on a guy, you would like to think that he would be somebody that's capable of making everybody better around him to the point where your team has a better chance of being successful. And Daniel Jones hasn't done that yet.
For example, Justin Herbert. I think they're 2-6, right?
Yep.
Do you have any questions? Any questions whether he's the quarterback of the future for the Chargers?
None.
Yeah, and I think that you'd like to, over the final seven games, you'd like to, and more than like to, you need to know.
Well, not only that, Dave, we have evidence of Justin Herbert going head-to-head with Pat Mahomes, and he pushed Pat Mahomes in that Chiefs team in overtime early in this season. He was called into duty before they thought he was ready, and guess what? The kid stepped up and performed. Now, I'm not saying that just that one performance is enough to say, hey, this is our guy, but you've seen that consistently throughout this season. Justin Herbert stepping up, being highly productive, putting his team in position to win games. And in his rookie year, you can kind of write that off if they don't find themselves on the winning side of it. But Daniel Jones stepped in after week two of 2019. So, I mean, he had his entire rookie season to kind of go through the growing pains and learn what it takes to be an NFL quarterback, the mistakes that you can't afford to make because they cost your team chances to win games. We shouldn't be seeing that at the end of year two. There's got to be some learning that happens in there that keeps the player from making those types of mistakes.
Yeah, I don't know if necessarily that's something like those mistakes or something that you could accredit to, you know, having a new system and no offseason and everything else. You know what I mean? Like, those aren't like, okay, you know, give him a break. It's a new offensive coordinator. It's a new language. It's a new system. Like
the throws that he made in the Tampa game are inexcusable. Like, those interceptions while he's in the grass and Shaq Barrett's bearing down on him, you can't make those throws, period. That's not new system, to your point.
Yeah, those are tough to explain away. Those are tough to defend. Because there's no need. Those are mind-numbing mistakes.
Right. Yeah. Those are not system mistakes. Those are inexcusable stuff.
Correct. And he's got to clean that up. I mean, if he wants to be the Giants quarterback, that stuff needs to be cleaned up. They need to win football games so you don't give whoever the GM ends up being, if it's Dave Gettleman or whoever else it ends up being, the opportunity to draft another quarterback.
I really believe if Gettleman goes, it means that this has gone very badly the final seven games, that the new GM and the current head coach, who had no dealings in bringing Daniel Jones into the system here, will want a new quarterback. That's my thought.
Yeah, but will they have the opportunity to take the new quarterback? Because I don't think it's going to be anyone outside of Lawrence or Fields.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, listen, you could not win a game the rest of the year, go 2-14, and still not get a chance at one of those guys.
Exactly. Fair point.
So, I mean, yeah, you're going to go now. I think that's at the point where you start making some excuses. Like, that's where you lean on the fact. I mean, he's a sixth overall pick.
You know what, Rick? You could start making excuses, but even if you're not positioned to get Trevor Fields or Justin I mean, Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields, even if you're not in position to get one of those guys with the top two picks, that doesn't mean that the Giants won't go out this offseason and be aggressive about trying to make a move to bring in somebody that can compete for that starting job. And if you're Joe Judge, that's exactly what you have to do if the turnovers continue, because, again, it gets back to the conversation about accountability. And how can you preach accountability to everybody in that locker room, whether it's Golden Tate or whether it's, you know, Corey Ballantyne or whoever you want to talk about? How can you preach accountability for your performance and your quarterback continues to turn the ball over at a rate that doesn't give your team a chance to win games? You can't. So for the sake of his program building, they would almost be forced to do that if this team isn't competitive down the stretch because Daniel Jones is turning the ball over.
Which stinks because you like – I mean, I do like everything about the kid.
Yeah, he's likable.
I mean, he's what he was asked to do last season, replacing Eli Manning. I mean, he stepped right in. He always says the right things.
You would like to see him do well. He's easy to root for.
Exactly.
He's an athletic
right.
kid. He's nice. There's not one – I mean, there's nothing you can say that you don't like about him, but at the end of the day, you guys know this better than anybody, are you producing? And so far, through a year and a half, there's real question marks about whether he's producing at a level which is appropriate for him.
But I think it also hurts him that there were a lot of people that questioned the Giants taking him at six.
Mm-hmm.
Like, going into it. Like, you could live with Eli Manning early on. I mean, let's take the first year out of it. I mean, because there were, I mean, that... Go back to that Ravens game. You thought he was
bad.
In that game.
It was bad. Eli was bad his first year.
But I mean, you're leaning on the fact that he's a Manning. And
yeah, his dad played at a high level. His brother was arguably the best quarterback in the NFL at that time.
Yeah, and he's the first overall pick.
Yeah.
So that guy's going to get, like, you feel like, okay, you know, once he figures it out, the sky's the limit.
And year two, they won the division.
No, I know. Which, again, you start winning games, say what you want. You're not giving your team the opportunity to even think about taking a quarterback. But those guys usually, like guys like that, usually will get, with the fan base, will get more leeway than somebody where it's a controversial pick. Like, people were on both sides of it.
Yes, and it was a different era. Like, that was a long time ago now. That's, what, 2004. You didn't replace it. Like, your quarterback got years before you really determined whether he was capable or not. Nowadays.
Well, you know why the quarterback got so much time, Dave, is because you didn't have a rookie wage scale.
Right.
So quarterbacks were coming into the league with $40 million guaranteed. I want to say Matt Stafford came into the NFL as the number one overall pick and had a contract that was worth $80 million with $40 million guaranteed.
Oof.
You're not – how can you replace that guy after a couple of years?
You can't.
You can't. But now, I mean, your commitment to a quarterback, you got a $40 million guaranteed contract, but you're talking about a signing bonus that's relatively low. And in comparison to what normal quarterbacks make, which is, you know, $30 to $35 million a year, I mean, you could stomach that as an organization. Like, that's more palatable now than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, and you see teams move on. It happens all the time. You saw it with Josh Rosen. You see it. It's something that happens, that if the guy's not good after 2 years, certainly 3 years, we're going to move in a different direction. I mean, would anybody wager that Sam Darnold's the starting quarterback for the Jets next year? There's no way. They're going to take another quarterback. That's what happens now.
Well, because they can take it, though. I mean, the reason why Josh Rosen was no longer the quarterback of Arizona was because they had the first overall pick.
Mm-hmm.
He put himself in that spot. Was it his fault? No, it wasn't, because the team was terrible, and it wasn't a great situation. But all of a sudden, I mean, the stars align, and you have, you know, Cliff Kingsbury, who already talked about how much he liked Kyler Murray. They had the first overall pick, so it worked out perfectly. And they felt like they could move on from Josh Rosen.
Yeah, that sucks for Josh Rosen, and it sucks for Steve Wilks, too. Like, that's just those guys didn't get a chance.
No,
you
it
hate
was
it
terrible.
For them.
It was an awful situation, but that's what happens, man. I mean, this is
– It's not always fair. You're right. It's not
always
fair.
And I hate
this
it.
Is the NFL.
And I hate the fact that because a lot of these guys are so good at what they do, they unfortunately go to really bad situations, to really bad teams. It's why I have some hesitation. Like, it looks like Herbert, Tua,
Burrow.
And Burrow could be – could be a similar draft class to Eli, Phillip Rivers, and Ben Roethlisberger. The only difference being is two of the three, Eli and Big Ben, went to really good organizations. You cannot make the argument that any of the organizations that Herbert, Burrow, and Tua are going to are well-run organizations.
No.
The one I will say that's getting it turned around is Miami. Miami's getting it turned around.
Mm-hmm. It feels, unless the owner does something stupid, but Miami feels like it's headed in the right direction.
Yeah, the Dolphins look good. I feel comfortable with the direction that the organization is going in. And Stephen Ross feels like he's taking a hands-off approach with it and letting Chris Greer and Brian Flores do whatever they need to do in order to build that program.
You think Miami goes to the postseason this year?
I do. I do. I'm on that train, Dave. We talked about it a week ago. I just, after seeing what they did out in Arizona and then the week before against the Rams, I just feel like this Dolphins team is scrappy, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, Tua's a really talented quarterback, man. He's got more wiggle than people want to give him credit for. He's got a big-time arm, and he's accurate. And he's got enough weapons to be able to do some damage. So, yeah, I think that division is going to come down to the Buffalo Bills and the Miami Dolphins. And I think they play Week 17, don't they?
Probably. It's a division game.
Yeah.
For the Patriots, so they have to.
Yeah, they play Week 17. So, I mean, like I think the division could come down to that game.
That'd be great.
But, I mean, we saw this coming with the Dolphins last year, though. Everybody was saying that they were tanking for Tua, and they ended up getting Tua. But we were talking about how they compete, and they didn't win a lot of games. I think they won 5 games, but it was a competitive team. And you said, you know what? They're building something there. You kind of feel that way about the Giants, save what's happened on the offensive side of the ball with Daniel Jones. But the way that defense is playing, it's keeping them in games, a lot of close losses. Pretty much every game is a fourth quarter game. You can feel the same way in terms of the personality that Joe Judge is trying to build for the Giants. The biggest question is whether or not you got the quarterback.
It's a monster question there. Monster. The Michael Kay Show's 20 and 20 contest continues today at 3 o'clock. The Michael Kay Show, as we know, has talked to the biggest sports celebrities in the game, and all you have to do is recognize the voice. So they play an audio clip, which is mind-numbingly easy. You call and get it right, and then you win a prize. Make sure you're listening for your chance at 20 great prizes over 20 days to make your home life a little more enjoyable. Today, the guys are giving away, Rick, you say you don't like Fridays, $500 cash.
Yeah, I like that.
Brighten up your Friday a little bit. $500 cash. It's the 20 and 20 contest brought to you by PC Richard & Son, Kansas City Steak, the Bartesian Premium Cocktails on Demand, and 98.7 ESPN. Let's go. The read was very good.
Yes.
It was very well done. It was concise. It was clean. There was no hiccups. You did well.
A lot of pressure, too. A lot of pressure.
And I could feel that you felt the pressure, but it didn't get in your way.
Now, Rick, is this Phil Mickelson's coffee, or is this Mike Tannenbaum's energy drink?
That's a great question.
Because I know you indulge in both.
I have to give credit to Mike T's energy drink, X2, because I hadn't had the coffee yet. Ella just brought me the coffee up. But I did sprinkle in an X2 this morning during the workout.
There you go.
So it's a lasting effect. So you know what it is? It's just the sustainable energy. You know what I mean? No spike.
It's a combination.
It's a combo. And I got golf on. I mean, what could be better except for the fact
that... No, this is good. And you know what I like about this golf? And I told you that come Sunday, I probably won't partake in a lot of it, certainly after 1 o'clock kicks off. But you know what's really nice about this? This is like the red zone. Because everybody's like taking an important shot every 5 seconds. Koepka shoots, then Langer shoots, then Mickelson shoots. And it's boom, 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 boom. This is the equivalent of the golf red zone for me. I'm enjoying this.
It's beautiful.
Right?
Got big names at the top of the leaderboard. Yeah, I mean, this is...
But honestly, Sunday, it slows down a lot, doesn't it?
Will Sunday slow down a lot? I mean, it's...
Yeah, because you're going to have two or three guys that you're really focused on. Now it's like you're interested in everyone.
Well, but who knows, though? We'll see what happens. I mean, currently right now, the guys that you're interested in are shooting well. So they could be involved on Sunday.
I know, but there's so many guys. You're not going to have 10 guys or 12 guys or 15 guys on Sunday.
I'm not saying 10, 12, 15, but I mean, if Justin Thomas is in the mix, Tiger Woods is in the mix, Dustin Johnson's in the mix. I mean, there's all the guys that you're looking to root for right now are shooting well.
So give me the winner. I'm right excited. Now, 9:37, Friday morning, who's going to win this thing?
Feels like Dustin Johnson has a really good chance to win this thing. Really good chance.
Nice.
Putting stroke looks nice.
Will Phil be involved on Sunday?
I hope so, but I'm not going to count on it.
Will Tiger be involved on Sunday?
I do like Tiger's chances to be involved. With as good as he... I mean, he actually could have shot better yesterday than he did. He was that
good.
Yeah,
he did.
Like, he was that good.
Longer. Yesterday. Just you see what he just did? Oh.
Yeah.
Out of the bunker?
Dude's money. Oh, he is money.
This man does not look 63, by the way.
His skin's terrific, isn't it? I probably won't be able to tie my shoes at 63.
Looks insane.
This guy's making quick work of Augusta. Ridiculous.
Looks terrific. By the way, Mega Millions giving you 165 million reasons to take a chance. That's a whole lot of millions. In Jersey, one mega chance could be all it takes. So take a chance on Mega Millions because anything, and I mean anything, can happen in Jersey. Huge Giants game. We've discussed a little bit. Really more big picture, but specifically for this game on Sunday, you know, it's which quarterback maybe makes fewer mistakes, because both of these guys have really shown signs that they're going to turn the football over. So, Chris, I would say one of the keys to this game is which quarterback turns it over less. Could be a huge key coming into this one.
Yeah, that's going to be a huge factor in this one, Dave. You got to have ball security. But along with that, I think the Giants found a formula for being able to protect Daniel Jones in that regard, and that is the running game, man. Being able to give him the outlet, turn around and hand the ball over to Alfred Morris or Wayne Gallman, that's going to be huge. Like, if your offense can give you the kind of production that they gave you, especially early on in that Washington game when you ran the ball for over 100 yards in the first half, that's what you're looking for in terms of being able to have some balance. If you give Daniel Jones some balance and you're less reliant on throwing the ball to be able to sustain drives, I think that's a winning formula for them on the offensive side of the ball.
You got to protect the young quarterback. I mean, you have to.
Yeah, but they've been much better at that over the last couple of weeks than they were earlier on in the season.
Well, I agree. I mean, we'll see what happens with Golden Tate. But, I mean, there's, you know, as and it sucks not having Saquon Barkley, but I think Gallman, I mean, and Alfred Morris was great for you last week.
Mm-hmm.
Was great. But there has to be the threat of the run. Because if there isn't, now you're going to expose Daniel Jones to making some bad decisions.
Totally. Yeah. And when this team is one-dimensional and you can tee off and go after Daniel Jones, it will not end well.
Yeah, you don't want to be one-dimensional against this Philadelphia Eagles front. You just don't want to be, man. Those guys can get after the quarterback, and if they can play the run on the way to the quarterback, that's not going to be good for Daniel Jones, because they're going to put him under the rest, and we've already seen that Daniel Jones doesn't always make the best decisions with the football when he's being pressured, as do most quarterbacks. That's how it is with most quarterbacks, but especially with him. So to me, on the offensive side of the ball, try to lean on that running game. Your offensive line has made strides in terms of being able to run the ball. They still don't get a ton of movement at the point of attack. But those guys get a hat on a hat, and they make sure that they got people covered up, and then those running backs run downhill. So if they can continue to do that, then that'll allow your offense to mix it up a little bit. You won't be as predictable. Jason Garrett has done a great job of being able to call plays, and if you give him the benefit of having a little bit of balance, I feel like it can make your offense that much more dynamic. And that's something that you can use to your advantage going up against the Eagles defense where they're shaky on the back end.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a positive sign that Daniel Jones leads your team in rushing.
No.
That's not how this thing was designed.
No, but in fairness, Gallman and Morris, the last two or three weeks, have run the ball really well.
Yeah, which has been a great sign moving forward. I think how they've juggled the offensive line has also been really good. I mean, this team, I will say this, continues to look like it gets better week to week.
Yes, and that's huge.
Look,
they have gotten better. From the last four games, they continue to get better. Now, are they a good football team? No, I wouldn't sit here and say that. But, I mean, they're getting – the offensive line, there's no doubt, is getting better. The defense continues to get better. And as we move through this season, which is one with a lot of question marks, they have become a better football team. They're not good. Nobody's going to have that argument. But they're a better team now than they were earlier on in the season. And that's kind of what you're looking for.
I mean, two of the three phases of the game, I mean, their special teams is good, and their defense has been surprisingly good.
One thing I will say about the defensive side of the ball, they're going to have to stop giving up them explosive plays. Like, there are just some gimmies that you can't give teams. Like the one to Terry McLaurin last week, or that wheel route early in the second half to Cam Sims to set up a scoring opportunity for Washington. Like, you got to stop doing that. Even if you have a three-possession lead, you can't have – those kind of lapses. And you know that Philadelphia has some explosive weapons on that offensive side of the ball. That's the part that worries me a little bit when it comes to this particular matchup in this game on Sunday.
This game scares me to death, because they're going to have Jalen Reagor's going to play. Sounds like Alshon Jeffrey's going to be back in play. So they're a very talented football team offensively.
Philadelphia. Yeah, and guys that can make big plays, Dave. That's the part that worries me.
Miles Sanders is back. He's a threat out of the backfield too, right, catching the ball.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
They have a lot of weapons. This is a good team. They have a lot of offensive weapons in Philadelphia.
Yeah, so it would help if you don't let any guys, you know, catch it and take it 70 yards to the house like Terry McLaurin did last week. That would help.
Yeah, tackling is a good thing. Like that Terry McLaurin, that was unacceptable, that play.
Yeah, you had three guys that had a shot at him, couldn't get him on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, Logan Ryan ran right by him. I mean, that's unacceptable. You're correct.
Yeah. But, I mean, if they do that, then you know the defense everywhere else is going to be solid.
Yeah, the defense flies around.
Yeah.
And the defensive line has been good. Leonard Williams has been surprisingly good.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we'll just – I really think this game is going to come down to which one of the quarterbacks turns the ball over.
You think this is a fourth quarter game, though, right?
It feels like it should be. But, again, I mean, the names that you just listed that are coming back healthy, I mean, that's a huge, huge boost for that offense.
It sounds like you're leaning toward the Eagles, Rico. Is this going to be one of your picks?
No, because I was leaning towards the Giants. I actually think
– Really? Okay.
Last time I checked, is it still 3.5?
Yep, still 3.5.
I didn't know if the Giants would win.
You want the Giants to win, don't you, Rick?
Yeah, I probably do. I probably do. I hate to even say it.
I thought maybe he didn't hear me, Chris, when I said it. There was just dead silence. Come on, Santiago. Come on.
I'm thinking about it. I mean, it's better for us if the Giants actually win this game.
Then there's some positivity, some juice. I will be... If the Giants win this game, you're going to get maniacal Rothenberg on Monday morning.
So you're jumping back on the bandwagon.
Woo! Don't I have to?
I don't know, Dave. That's a scary proposition. I mean, I guess you do, but man.
I'm crazy. I mean, the only thing standing in the way of the Giants and the division title would be an awful Eagles team,
like
Chris.
Like that kind of party.
That's it.
That's your favorite, isn't it?
That's my favorite. Santi, play that again, please.
Like that kind of party.
Oh, that's my favorite.
That's a good one.
Oh, man.
That's a good one. But I mean, you'll have beaten Philadelphia. We just went through their schedule. You have a winnable game, and I'm not saying you win it, a winnable game coming up next week in Cincinnati. Yeah, if the Giants win this game, I will actually be excited and think that the final six games have real meaning of the season.
Yeah, they do. I mean, but after that Cincinnati game, you got Seattle, Arizona, Cleveland, and Baltimore.
Yeah, that's not good.
No, it's not good. But, I mean, we don't know where Philly will be at that point. I mean, because if Philadelphia can lose to the Giants, I mean, that doesn't mean that, you know, they're not a good team.
No.
So what happens when they play better competition?
Right.
So,
they're the same team. They're Seattle. They're Cleveland. It's the same, you know, murderer's row.
Exactly.
It's Arizona.
Exactly. So you could be talking about these two teams being right there. And although we don't think that they're worthy of being a playoff team, somebody's going to the playoffs out of the NFC East. Why shouldn't it be you if you're the New York Giants?
You could get the division winner to have six victories this season.
Okay. There it is.
Don't you think? Don't you think if Philly goes 6-9-1? In fact, I'll say it. If Philly goes 6-9-1, how do they not win the division?
That's a great question. I don't know, Dave.
The Giants aren't getting to 7.
No.
Dallas isn't getting to 7.
And I don't think Washington's getting there either. Like, Washington's a mess.
So if you're Philly, wouldn't you right now sign for 6-9-1?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pathetic.
At three wins right now? Yeah. Yeah.
6-9-1 puts you in a stranglehold to win this division.
Yeah, think about it. Who else is going to catch you, Dave?
No one. Because they'd have to win 7. There's no way any of those teams are winning 7 games.
You'd be hard-pressed to see it, Dave. You'd be hard-pressed to see it. I mean, of any of the teams, I think Philadelphia is capable of it. Do I think they'll do it? At the way that Carson Wentz is turning the ball over? No. No. So, yeah, you could be talking about a division winner with 6 wins.
You could argue this is the worst division in the history of the NFL. And it's, I mean, really.
Have we ever had a division winner that had 6 wins?
I don't think so.
In the 16-game season?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so. So yeah,
the Seahawks won the 7.
Seahawks and the Panthers at 7. Yes. Yeah, Dave, I'm with you. If you talk about the division winner in the NFC East this year having 6 wins, yeah, you could make a strong argument that this is the worst division in the history of football.
Yeah. We go from a great to someone who hasn't been so great. Andy and Merrick joins us now, and then it's going to be RJ Bell live in Vegas. But we start with the great, and that is the always effervescent Andy in Merrick. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, DCR. What a Friday to be alive, fellas.
Yeah. What a Friday to be alive, Andy.
You know, I've been in Dallas all week. Dave, you may have to hold your nose here. I got four questions about those Dallas Cowboys.
How about them Cowboys?
Yeah! Oh, God.
DC, right in your wheelhouse, man.
I'm ready for it, Andy. What we got?
All right. The Cowboys moved into Texas Stadium during the 1971 season. What was their home from 1960 to 1970?
Ooh, Andy, I want to say it was the Cotton Bowl.
CeCe, my man.
It was the Cotton Bowl?
All right.
There we go.
Cowboys do not retire jerseys for some reason. But there have been four jerseys that have been kept out of circulation for the last 15 years. Can you name those numbers?
I'm going to attempt to sit this out.
Why?
Because I'm. It's so disingenuous.
You know what? Why do you have to sit it out, Dave? Come on now.
I just dislike the Cowboys so much.
Yeah, don't do this.
The last how many years, Andy?
Last 15 years, these four jerseys have been out of Cowboy circulation.
Hmm. Well, 88 is not one of them because I know CeeDee Lamb wears that. Is 8 one of them?
Aikman's one.
Yeah.
12.
Does anybody wear 33?
Number 12, Roger Staubach, 33, is still technically in use.
What about 22?
Yeah, that was
22. Bob Hayes and Emmitt Smith. Save DiPietro.
There we go.
And one more. D lineman.
74?
Bob Lilly. There you go. All right, boys. Jason Witten holds the team record for receptions, receiving yards, but he does not hold the team record for touchdown receptions in a career as a Cowboy. Who does?
Is it the X?
Dez Bryant. Yep. CC. President CC. And finally, I got a curveball for you here, boys. There have been three Heisman Trophy winners drafted by the Cowboys. Name them.
Ooh.
Steve Walsh did not win the Heisman Trophy, right?
Didn't Staubach win the Heisman?
Yes, Staubach did. Yep.
Did Dorsett?
That's two.
Yep.
Come on, guys. One more.
Come on, Dave. One more. Do your part.
He said drafted by, so this is going
to be Herschel Walker.
Correct. Herschel Walker's number three.
I don't know how I didn't lock
in
on that one.
Wow. Fantastic job, guys. Hey, also happy birthday to Foreman Heisman Trophy winner and Cowboy Vinny Testaverde.
Oh, big happy birthday to Elmont's own.
Former every team in the NFL with Vinny Testaverde.
Long Island's own Vinny Testaverde. Fellas, let's be careful out there. And as always, stay healthy, boys.
Lovely, Andy. Thank you so much. A terrific job as
terrific. Always. Terrific job.
Yeah, that was fun. That was nice. Santiago, did you know all the answers to those questions?
I did, unfortunately. I did.
You should have chimed in.
Why? He's asking you, not me.
Yeah, but
you're part of the show. You're part of the unit.
Yeah, I mean, you are the Cowboys fan of the show.
Okay, but you know what? I guarantee you, Dave, that you knew the answer to all those questions.
I didn't want to play.
All of them.
I was turned off by the whole
Dallas
thing.
Don't be like that. Don't be being a selfish guy. Now you're being a bad guy.
That's right. But we did not struggle. We didn't struggle.
No, I know.
The two of you guys were sensational.
The fact that you thought that is bad.
Our football picks later. Rick, you have surged to 500 on the season. Congratulations. 13-13-1. That is terrific news for you.
And I would give up making picks in a second.
At 500. But a man who has a lot of work to do to get to 500 is our resident expert out in Las Vegas, the wonderful, talented RJ Bell. Good morning, RJ.
You know, at some point when I'm on a cold streak, you got to start having some sympathy.
I do feel badly. But before we ask for picks or do salutations or any of that stuff, let me give you and Chris congratulations. You're off the schneid. You guys were 0-8. You took the Bills plus 3 last week. They comfortably covered. Congratulations to you and Chris.
Well, listen, what would you expect? But you listen, really, if you think about it, what are the odds right now that we're going to be above or at 500 at the end of the year?
None.
One pick a week.
None.
No?
You're 1-8. No.
You have that little faith in Chris?
No.
It's demonstrated performance. You also took, let's not bury the lead. You also took the Jets under.
Great pick.
Yeah,
that was
interesting. Flacco, now I will, I won't make any excuses, but I will say that it was under the assumption of Sam Darnold. But that said, if you bet early, you bet early, right? So what do you do? I mean, we thought he was going to play. Flacco looked like he was 2014.
Yeah, it was not good for you. So 2-7 for you personally, 1-8 for you and Chris. Let's get right to it, and then we'll go around the league. Chris, do you have the three games you'd like to set up for one RJ Bell?
I sure do, Dave. I am rolling with these three games. RJ, tell me the one you like. I've got the Steelers at home laying the 7.5, the Eagles on the road laying the 3.5, and the Raiders laying 4 at home against the Broncos.
Huh. All right. Well, I certainly don't like the Eagles.
Nice.
Here's the thing that I went over on our show, which is if you look at the Giants relatively and say, what have you upgraded or downgraded them on the season? I'm guessing you guys would say a little bit of a downgrade, but not, you know, they're not much worse than you expected. Is that fair to say?
No, I think they're pretty much what we expected. I mean, they're in every game, RJ.
I agree. So if you look at the Eagles, would you say they're, you know, significantly less of a team than we expected?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. If you look at the preseason line on this game, we call it the summer line, that was available in June and July, it was 3.5. The line now is 3.5. So somehow, some way, even though Philly is significantly worse than we thought, Giants not near as much, line's the same. I think what we're seeing with Philly, in fact, I know it, is there's always this sense that this week we're going to see the true Philly, the team that we thought we were going to have, and maybe we will. And if anything, this week you could make the case you're going to get some guys back and, you know, potentially injury-wise, they improve significantly. But other than that, and we aren't even sure about that, I think the value's on the Giants. As you guys have said, Giants been covering, and 3.5 here, and it's kind of shifting down. In fact, this may be a best bet of mine on the Giants. I'm going to wait and talk it through.
All right, so what about the other two games?
Well, with Big Ben's status, It's still not certain.
I lived this movie too many times, RJ, with Ben Roethlisberger dealing with some kind of injury. Even though it's COVID, this is different. Roethlisberger always plays. Always plays.
Well,
everything
gonna,
out of Pittsburgh is that he's going to play.
COVID. I will say he is a top. I mean, as a Steelers fan, you got to appreciate his toughness, and I do. So I agree. Obviously, the COVID. But then you got to wonder about no practice and all that. And then you look
said
at the Bengals.
Said the same thing about the Titans when they played the Bills on, what was that, a Tuesday?
No doubt. I mean, in general, the COVID scares have been a negative for the teams against the spread, though certainly an example you could make would be Tennessee. Though, in hindsight, when I looked at that game, you got to wonder about how the Bills, in that case, were uncertain of who they were going to play, if it was going to be Kansas City. But again... I think, would you agree, Chris, in general, COVID had a negative, or scares have had a negative effect on the teams?
I would agree with that.
All right. So, you know, Bengals have covered a lot of games recently. Here's an interesting point in the game PFF was talking about, is a lot of people are making an analogy between the Ravens and their pressure and how it just tore, you know, Burrow up, and the Steelers saying, well, they put pressure too. This is the other team that can do that. But what they were stressing was the Ravens do an interesting thing where they put pressure, and wherever the hot route is, they drop a guy a lot of the times and just make it a very confusing situation where young quarterbacks struggle with that, where Pittsburgh is more matter-of-fact and straight ahead with their pressure. You know, that makes sense to me that a young quarterback would struggle more with that. I also think that you got to wonder about the Bengals' O-line because – they had 5 starters out before the bye, literally, and they had by far their best O-line performance. So as starters come back, is that a good thing or a bad thing? So I'm pretty confused by the game. I'm not going to play it, but I probably, especially a 7.5, would lean Bengals.
Okay. So that puts us on the Raiders-Broncos game.
Yeah, and I would say I'll go with the Raiders here and agree with you. I think that if you look at Derek Carr, he's going down the field in the last couple weeks in a way he has not in maybe his whole career. And I'm not sure if something with Gruden has clicked, but that's been something Gruden, you know, Carr being too much of a check down guy, it's been a real frustration from Gruden to Carr. It feels like that's improved. And, in fact, statistically, air yards and such, it has, and just eye test it has. I think the Broncos, everyone kind of knows that Locke has not done well except for the fourth quarter, but to some degree, that score still sticks in your mind when they come back against the Chargers, for example. So I think the Broncos probably are a little overrated. And I think the Raiders, though their defense is bad, you could make the case the Raiders have a top five offense, which sounds crazy, but statistically it's right there. And the Lions 4, home field has not been, you know, it actually just happened after last night's game. The road teams have outscored the home teams this year by 14 points or 16 points. So, I mean, again, this late in the year, that never happens. Obviously, the lack of fans has mattered. Also, I think finally another reason to like the Raiders, let's start thinking about big wins. And if you put Kansas City and New Orleans on the list of marquee wins, I'm not sure what team does better than that. So, you know, Raiders have not only won games, but they've won big games. So I'll agree with you on Las Vegas.
RJ Bell with us here, 98.7 ESPN. RJ, you say when a game's confusing, probably stay away from it. And I'm so flummoxed by this one. Dolphins have been playing terrific. Tua looked great. They're home in the heat of Miami. Chargers find ways to lose every week, yet the Dolphins only a one-point favorite. Walk me through this one and who you like here.
Well, one of the basic things that you guys may have heard of, the Pythagorean wins. And the concept is that in the long run, you're going to even out your close wins and losses. And again, with the Chargers, we got to chuckle at that. And thus, the margin, the point margin over the course of a season is very meaningful. So, for example, Green Bay last year had an amazing record, 13 wins ultimately, but their point differential was like not that much above even. And so the Vegas guys, the math guys, would say that's really a 9-win team maybe, and they won 13. Typically, that's a valid way to approach it. And if you look at the Chargers against the Dolphins, even though the Dolphins have the better record, the net margin isn't crazy different. And, in fact, this is my world premiere of this stat. I haven't heard it anywhere else. The only two teams in the NFL not to lose a game by more than a touchdown this year, Pittsburgh and the Chargers. And oh, by the way, the Chargers have two wins, as you guys know. So it's been crazy, the number of close losses, but this isn't the first year for it. So to me, I'm going to give you an amazing out here, my friend Dave. Tease up the Chargers. 6-point teaser gets you to 7.5. You tease through 3, you tease through 7. This is what we call an advantage teaser, but it's a team, at least so far, that never loses by margin, but they lose these close games seemingly a disproportionate amount of time. Personally, you know, with a teaser, you got to go with two teams, and what people like to do is either tease up or down through 3 and 7. So you want to look at the small spreads, 1.5, 2, to go up. So, for example, you might like the Bills plus 8.5. You might like the Seahawks plus 8. You know, that's actually an interesting one there. Yeah, why don't we do that? Why don't we go Seahawks and Chargers on a two-team teaser?
Okay.
And Seahawks would be, in that case, plus 8.
All right. Seahawks.
Sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
It sounds delicious if I was.
That's it. They tease you, those teasers.
No, they really do.
Is it my turn to ask a question? Because I just fell asleep. I mean, we got to tighten this thing up. I mean, we
fell asleep
the entire time.
You got people pulled over in the car writing stuff down right now.
Yeah, to bet the opposite of what you just said.
Wow.
All right, here we go. I mean, since I'll just ask you, I got to pick one game because you can't. We only have
why? Why are you even?
Question.
Why are you asking?
Well, because I have to. I'm contractually.
You don't have to. Come on, let's be honest.
All right, so you mentioned that that Seahawks game. Their defense is terrible. Rams coming off a bye. I mean, is this, if you don't tease this game, would you like the Rams laying the two?
I got to tell you, I actually have been really down on Seattle this year, and I feel like maybe that's come around. And part of it is they've lost a few games. And, you know, the line in this game is saying with a modest home field, and statistically maybe it's zero, but they're still built in about 1.5 points a game. And I'm not sure that's wrong, to be honest, just because, you know, what's occurred so far isn't necessarily the exact truth. I mean, you see a lot of variation in home field throughout. You know, last year was very small, actually. The year before, it was significantly more. Now, has the league really changed in 2 years? Other than COVID and the lack of fans, I'm not sure. The thing about Seattle also that, you know, so I think they're priced a little cheaper, you know, now after the losses. But also, they've really been trying to change their defense. Obviously, it's been bad, but given Pete Carroll and the D coordinator credit, they've been trying to swap some stuff up. And to me, my sense is when you are a Hall of Fame coach, and I think that's fair to say with Pete Carroll, at some point they're going to figure it out. And I think the Rams, and you guys have heard this, I'm sure, you know, they've beat the NFC East effectively, and that's it. So I'm not impressed. I mean, I don't know what the Rams' best win is, but it isn't that good. So strength of schedule, I think, obviously a negative for the Rams. So if I had to pick the game, it might be slight Seattle, but teaser, obviously going through 3-7, even more attractive.
RJ, Rick brought up contractual obligations, and in the interest of being a company man, I got to bring up an ESPN vehicle, the Vikings-Bears Monday night game. And it's two teams that are going in opposite directions. The Vikings have won two in a row. The Bears have lost three in a row. The Vikings are on the road laying in 2.5. How do you see that game?
I think this is a great example of looking at the line moves. Now, we had talked about in the Giants game the idea that from the summer on it should have moved, but it hasn't. Well, let's talk about from the opener this week on Sunday and compare to the look ahead the week before. So the look ahead is a line that comes out like right now, week 11, you can bet for the look ahead. So it's next week. The only thing that happens in the interim is the one game over the weekend. And what we saw was Chicago looked really bad. Minnesota looked really good. And literally the line has flipped from Chicago being a small favorite, you know, 2 points or so, to now being a 2.5 point underdog. So to see a 4.5 point swing from, let's say, +2 to -2.5 is, or in this case, Chicago would be the other way, -2 to +2, is too much. I mean, Minnesota impressed. And what tends to happen sometimes is these teams are playing pretty well. And, you know, remember, Minnesota almost won against Seattle and maybe should have won. And they've been playing pretty well. And lo and behold, last week it hit. Everyone kind of got it. This team's not so bad. This team might be a playoff team even, considering seven spots and all that. And Chicago went against a bad Tennessee team. And this might be, at least on defense, and this might be one of the most damning stats of the week, if not the year, is up until that Chicago game, Tennessee had the worst third down conversions defensively in the history of the NFL. They literally gave up more third downs than any team ever, conversion-wise, and Chicago went 2 out of 15. So if you're against the worst ever and you're 2 out of 15, I'm not sure how you get worse than that.
Yeah.
That said, I got to like Chicago because the line just should not swing 4 points that quickly.
RJ Bell with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So you typically make your pick of the week. Is your pick that tease, or are you just going to take a one?
No. You know what I'm going to do?
What are you going to do?
I'm thinking about this. You know, I'm actually going to double up because I got to tell you, me and Mr. Michael K is on the outs. I mean, I'm just going to say personally.
He is very displeased with you.
He's very fickle. Very fickle. I mean, it was funny. At the end, I kind of said something that, you know, actually had him speechless. Is I said, you know, everyone, you know, because they were pretty hard on me. I said, this is how they react when my first year with them, I won. My second year with them, I won. And my third year this year, I'm winning. Meaning on that show, I'm still above 500. and still it was relentless. And he kind of paused. I think he had second thoughts, but we'll see. But my pick was, I like the 49ers. Well, that line's actually drifted up to 10. I had it at 9.5. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take it at 10 with you guys.
All right, so
current
San
line
Fran
is 10, 49ers. 10.
San Fran plus 10, putting your 2-7 record on the line.
Dave, you better shape up, man. There might be a host change on Saturday 11.
Yeah, you're not going to be with me anymore? That'd be unfortunate. All right, so one more from me. Ravens-Patriots. I don't know. I would probably avoid this at all costs. I can't. New England looks terrible. Cam is banged up now. They're getting 7 points. It's a primetime game. I can't go against Belichick. What's your take on this one?
No, I mean, I tend to agree. If I was forced to play it, I'd probably play the Ravens. But you guys, I'm sure, heard Lamar talking about, oh, the other team knows what we're doing. Well, if that's, you know, on offense, shouting out stuff, if that's the case, then Belichick's certainly, you know, if you have tendencies that clear and obvious, Belichick's not the one to be playing. You look at their ability, the Ravens, to run the ball. On first down last year, if you look at success rate, is they were the second best running the ball on first down, the Baltimore Ravens. This year, they're 21st. So just fundamentally, something's wrong. Now, obviously, they lost their left tackle. They lost their, you know, Hall of Fame guard to retirement entering the year. And they put a lot of resources in that defense, not much on the offense. I think, you know, it's starting to show. And, you know, I think it's a little too broad to say this, but you could say that the Ravens are running like an advanced version of the Wildcat. You know, you've got a runner that can throw, but, I mean, he's a runner first. And the Wildcat got exterminated for a reason. They figured it out. And it feels like the league's figured this thing out. And remember, the coming out party with Lamar, you know, really was that New England game when New England was 8-0 last year, and they just blew their socks off. But that means, one, okay, maybe the Ravens got their scheme figured out, or maybe it's Belichick with a second crack's going to do better. So to me, this is one of the most fascinating games. It does feel like the line's a little low because everyone's scared of Belichick and betting against him. And maybe this is just an example where coaching doesn't matter, because if anything, usually Belichick struggles against running quarterbacks, and this team is slower than most for the Patriots, and slowness in Lamar does not go well.
RJ Bell joins us here on the show. RJ, last one from me. I know 13 is a lot of points, but, I mean, it's going to be cold in Green Bay. Jacksonville, I mean, they're not very good. I mean, is this one of those games where you lay the big number? Because, I mean, the Packers are one of the better front-running teams in the National Football League.
Now that's an interesting way to say. So you're saying once they get rolling in the game, they keep rolling?
They keep rolling.
But I will also say they're one of the kind of letdown teams that will lose a game you wouldn't expect like this. So maybe you've got a point. Maybe if you play, if you like Jacksonville, you play the money line and take a real crack at it.
Ooh, huh. Interesting.
Here's what I'll say about Green Bay. I can't predict. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, to me, I'm not a big fan of his. I mean, obviously, massive talent. Obviously, some of the greatest seasons in NFL history. He's just his way and my way. I just don't dig it. And, you know, I don't know. Sometimes maybe it colors my opinions. But I know certainly it doesn't help me understand his psychology. I don't understand when he's up and when he's down. I mean, it's hard to imagine they weren't up for the Tampa game. And you could say, well, they got killed. But then you think that, and I know this doesn't work, the transitive property or whatever, but if you think, okay, Tampa destroyed Green Bay, and then Green Bay beat New Orleans in New Orleans pretty easily by 8, and then obviously New Orleans just kills Tampa. So it's like it doesn't make sense to me. It kind of makes me respect Green Bay more, though, in that, boy, the fact they went into New Orleans and did what they did, I mean, who else has done that? No one. And right now New Orleans is probably considered the best team in the NFC. So I don't want to bet against Green Bay, but I can't figure out Aaron Rodgers.
All right, RJ. Listen, we appreciate it. I will talk to you tomorrow morning at 11. We got your games locked down. San Fran plus 10 for you solo. Raiders minus 4 is you and Canty, the collaboration. Good stuff. We'll talk to you
tomorrow. How would you say the quality of the info was today, Dave?
I thought you were very good today. Now, we'll see if it pans out. We'll see if you actually give successful selections.
Well, you know,
selections.
They call that being results-oriented. You should be process-oriented, Dave.
No, we are a results-oriented business. We're not looking to give out losers here, RJ.
Thank you.
RJ, one last quick one for me, because you had such a good opinion. I mean, today was great. As much as I bust your chops. How do you, just in general, for people betting games, when you look at a game and then all of a sudden, like, you like, say, I'm looking at the Houston-Cleveland game. Cleveland coming off the bye. I think Houston's defense is really bad. But then I'm looking more into the game, and apparently there's going to be tons of wind. The weather's going to be bad. How much do you factor that into the decision?
Oh, well, I got to tell you, if you think back to that Cleveland-Oakland or Raiders game,
it was
all about the wind in that game. And I actually liked the Browns in that game, figuring they could run the ball better. But again, the Raiders figured it out, and Gruden deserves the credit. I think the wind is a huge factor, but I'm not so sure who it favors, because on one hand, if that means maybe the quarterback, a couple busted plays from the quarterback might be key, well, Deshaun Watson. And Watson's had a sneaky good year. If you stop and just remove those first three games, which he was fine in, but after that, he's had 13 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. And he's really, you know, obviously not turned the ball over. So I kind of was leaning towards the over in that game. But the wind is a fact. You know, if wind gets up above 15, 18 miles an hour, and I think Chris can attest to this, as much as cold, people talk about it, snow, wind, or rain, but all that stuff is very secondary to wind. Mm-hmm. If it's windy, it's hard to throw. Chris, would you agree with that?
Completely agree, RJ.
So, you know, to me, I think it hurts scoring, and it hurts a team that has to throw. That seems like it's advantage Browns, but I'm not sure.
All right, RJ, we appreciate it. I'll talk to you in the morning. Have a good one.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
All right, that, of course, is RJ Bell. Now, Mega Millions, giving you 165 million reasons to take a chance. That's a whole lot of millions. In Jersey, one mega chance could be all it takes, so take a chance on Mega Millions, because anything can happen in Jersey. And guys, this Saturday night, that's tomorrow night, 10 o'clock, top-ranked boxing on ESPN-TV, presented by DraftKings. Terrence Crawford puts his WBO welterweight title on the line against Kell Brook. That's 10 o'clock Saturday night on ESPN-TV, with undercard beginning at 7 o'clock on ESPN+. SportsCenter at the Masters is on ESPN-TV all morning long with official coverage. The official coverage of the 2020 Masters starts at 1 o'clock. Can't wait for 1 o'clock. Head to ESPN+ now and start streaming featured groups, Amen Corner, featured holes, and so much more. To get all this coverage all weekend long, head to ESPNplus.com right now to subscribe. Let's bring them in, our college football aficionado, we'll call him, the great Paul Feinbaum. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Good morning, guys. This could be a short segment with as many games that have been postponed this week.
This is a disaster, and that's where I wanted to start with you. I mean, it feels like the juice, at least for me, is kind of being sucked out of the college football season, Paul, doesn't it?
I think it is, and I know, you know, you have coaches like Nick Saban complaining about the contact tracing and all that. In fact, Jimbo Fisher, the Texas A&M coach, told me this week he had to cancel, postpone, whatever the word is, the game with Tennessee. They only had 2 positives. But the problem isn't that. It's the fact that look out your window, look around the country. This thing is raging. The virus is raging. And we always knew college football would be the most susceptible, and it is. And, you know, for all the arguing over whether the playoffs should be backed up, I think we're going to be fortunate or lucky if we get that far.
Let's just say, just to be optimistic, that they find a way to get through this. Is that the next step? That feels like the next step. If they're not going to expand the playoffs, are they going to at least push them back?
Well, for the first time yesterday, they broached that subject. The commissioner of the Big 12 said, you know, we'll think about it. And that, by the way, when you get a college football administrator to admit that they'll think about anything other than the status quo, that qualifies for breaking news. But, I mean, they have to be flexible, and right now, let me go conference by conference. In the SEC, there are 14 teams. 4 games have been called off, including the #1 team. And you know, what has always been one of the biggest games in the country, Alabama, LSU. Last year it was the game of the year in the sport. I mean, the whole world was there, including the president. So that game is now postponed. You have 3 of the top 5 teams in the country, including Ohio State, aren't playing this weekend. And when a Big Ten team
has to miss a game, that game's gone. There's no, they have no makeup. So you start getting into some serious conversations of whether you'll have legitimate conference championships, and then that leads to, you know, can you possibly push the season back? They don't want to push the season back for this reason. The playoff games are on January 1st. It's college football's traditional biggest day of the year. You got the Rose Bowl, always 4 o'clock Eastern time. You see the sun starting to set over the San Gabriel Mountains. And the biggest issue is if you push the playoffs back and the national championship back, which is on January 11th, you're right in the middle of the NFL. And that's not something college football wants to deal with, because it's already bad enough that the college football championship game is on a Monday night and the wild card games are on Saturday and Sunday. And now you push it a week or two back, and all the air goes out of the balloon, as you said. And by the way, that there's no guarantee you ever get to it if you keep pushing it back.
Paul, I know you're not the biggest Jim Harbaugh fan, but what is Michigan going to do with him? I mean, it's one thing not to be able to beat Ohio State, but then losing to Michigan State, and then, no disrespect to Indiana, but losing to a Hoosiers team, that's not why they paid Jim Harbaugh to come to Michigan and be their head coach. So, I mean, where do they go from here as a program? What are they going to do?
What's so interesting right now is Michigan has just gone dark side of the moon. You don't hear anything from them because they don't really know what to do. And I think every week becomes more critical. Saturday night they play Nebraska. If they lose that game, then I think there's zero path Jim Harbaugh has for coming back. But nobody really wants to think about paying off coaches right now. Everyone knows the problems are, you know, the same in college athletics as they are in everywhere else. So I think they have to, you know, they're thinking about it. You know, they're talking about it. Is there a solution there? I think deep down they're hoping that Harbaugh finds another job, that his agent somehow convinces some owner in the NFL to hire him. I was, you know, I mean, his name, listen, you guys hear this stuff all the time. His name's been mentioned for half a dozen NFL jobs, from Dallas to the Jets, assuming he could get these jobs. And you know, a year ago he could have. Right now he's not exactly a hot commodity.
Paul Feinbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Let me ask you about that Clemson-Notre Dame game. Couple questions. Firstly, you think that the Clemson wins if Trevor Lawrence was the quarterback? And secondly, is there any way you can see Notre Dame not involved in the college football playoff at this point?
Yeah, I think it's debatable. Yeah, certainly they would have probably had a slightly better chance. But, I mean, they had good quarterback play. I mean, the problem really was their defense, which has been struggling for a couple weeks. Back to the second question. These two will meet again December 19th. And assuming that Notre Dame, you know, makes it a competitive game, I think Notre Dame would probably get into the playoffs. And I know a lot of folks are saying, well, of course, Notre Dame, biggest name in the sport. That would not be the main reason they got in, but that certainly would influence these 13 people on the committee. I mean, Notre Dame is golden. And it would be, and by the way, if Notre Dame got into the playoffs, do you realize we could see Clemson, Notre Dame three times? Well, we very likely would see them three times this year if they fall, you know, if they fall in the right spot. But, Notre Dame is very impressive. I give Brian Kelly kudos for resurrecting that program 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, they had a losing record, and it looked like he was about to get fired.
Paul Feinbaum joins us here on the show. Paul, how bad is it for the Big Ten that Ohio State's game against Maryland was canceled? Like, isn't this the reason why the Big Ten decided to play, was because Ohio State would end up in the college football playoff?
Yeah, and the issue becomes if Ohio State loses another game and somehow Indiana goes undefeated, they would trump them for the Big Ten championship game. As crazy as that sounds, I think you have to have a minimum, unless everyone else goes down one. I think you have to have 6 games. I bet they'll figure out a way what they really ultimately need to do, and I think they'll do it, is say, you know what, let's forget these stupid divisions. Let's just take the two best teams, which is what the ACC is doing. There is no way the Big Ten is having a championship game without Ohio State.
Paul, going back to that game last weekend in Georgia, Florida, I thought quarterback play was the difference in that game. I mean, Stetson Bennett was god-awful for Georgia. And on the opposite end of the spectrum, you had Kyle Trask, who is putting together a season for the ages. I mean, could you make an argument that he's having the best season of any quarterback in college football?
Yes, you can make that argument. And this is a guy that was not a starter. By the way, this guy's never started a game in high school or in college until last year when he came in for Felipe Franks, who was injured. He's playing flawlessly. And Georgia's quarterback situation is about as bad of a quarterback situation as I have ever seen. And, you know, I don't need to keep reminding everyone that 2 years ago Justin Fields was on that team as a backup quarterback and could barely get in the game. And Kirby Smart decided that Jake Fromm, who I think he's the third string or fourth string or whatever string quarterback now for the Bills, and he'll probably never get in an NFL game. So, you know, they just had a calamity of errors this year. The guy that was supposed to start opted out about 3 weeks before. The next guy was terrible. The guy they really thought would ultimately take over, JT Daniels, who's a transfer from Southern Cal, has still not really been cleared to play significant time. And they got a walk-on, and he looks like a walk-on, doesn't he?
Exactly. He's awful.
he really does. He is brutal. All right, Paul, listen, we appreciate a couple minutes. Hopefully there's still college football next week to discuss with you, and we will do it at this very same time next Friday at 10:30. Good stuff as always. Thanks.
Enjoy it. Thank you, guys.
All right, good stuff. That, of course, Paul Feinbaum. Now, today on ESPN Daily, guys, he's 23 years old and playing at an MVP level. Is this Kyler Murray's moment here, how Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury have led the Cardinals, something they haven't seen in a while, and that's success on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your get. We don't have a lot of time to get into it, which is really a shame. The Marlins have named the first female GM in professional sports. Kim Ng gets hired by the Marlins to run things down there. Rick, that is really cool.
No, that's awesome. I mean, you had Don Mattingly win NL
Manager of the Year.
Yeah.
And now Kim Ng is going to be the new GM of the Marlins. I mean, it's a team that's easy to root for. I'll tell you that. I wish we had more time to get into it and discuss it, but it's a great day for sports. We want to remind you can listen to us anywhere. Click listen live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play 98.7 ESPN at 98.7 ESPN New York. We go, of course, where you go. And at 3 o'clock, you're going to go to the Michael Kay Show, and the 20 and 20 contest continues today at 3. The Kay Show has talked to the biggest sports celebrities in the game, and all you have to do, and this is it, is recognize a very simple audio clip. Make sure you're listening for your chance at 20 great prizes over 20 days to make your home life a little more enjoyable, and this will make your home life a lot more enjoyable. The guys are giving away cold, hard cash today, $500. In fact, it's the 20 and 20 contest brought to you by PC Richard & Son, Kansas City Steak, the Bartesian Premium Cocktails On Demand, and 98.7 ESPN. All that being said, we have wound up at our football selections. Rick, dominating, 13-13-1. I am 3.5 back at 11-16, and Chris 9-18. Rick, as always, if you lead, you choose. Would you like to go first, second, or third?
I'll go third. I'll keep it the same. Here we go.
All right, Rick, we'll go third. Chris, I'll start if you're fine with that.
All right, let's do it.
All right, I wrote down the Giants, and then I crossed them out. I just can't do it. There's too much at stake. I can't be worried about the Giants needing to cover this number. So I think they do, but I'm not going to take it. I'm going to start out with the Rams. I'm going to lay the 2 with the Rams against Seattle. I think the Rams might all around just be the better team. I understand the quarterback is a huge advantage for Seattle, but Chris Carson continues to be out, and I just don't trust Seattle at this point. Their defense is really, really bad. I think the Rams put up a lot of points. I'll take the Rams and lay the 2. I'm taking all favorites this week. My second favorite, and I'm going prime time now, Baltimore. Not sure. What do I do? New England's bad. I saw it. Their defense is really bad. I get Baltimore, and Baltimore likes the. I think they want to make a statement here, and they like to beat up on teams, and I think they will. I'll take Baltimore and lay the 7 on Sunday night. And lastly, RJ gave me every reason to not, but the Bears are brutal, and Minnesota's playing much better football. I think they're going to go to the postseason. I think their run continues now. I'll take Minnesota and lay the 2.5. So Rams minus 2, Baltimore minus 7. And Minnesota minus 2.5. Chris, you're up.
Well, Dave, I'm riding the state of Pennsylvania on the way to victory, and I don't need mail-in ballots to do it. I do plan on the Steelers defense delivering, and everybody's talking about whether or not Big Ben is going to be able to play in the game. I think he will, but even without Big Ben, I just like this matchup for that Steelers defense, Dave. I do. I'll lay the 7.5 points. This is a defense that leads the NFL in hits on the quarterback, sacks on the quarterback, and interceptions. Going up against a rookie in the division in Joe Burrow, they're going to send a message to them. I like the Steelers. And we've talked about it before. I like the Philadelphia Eagles laying the 3.5. They're getting healthy, Dave. They got Miles Sanders back. Alshon Jeffrey should be back. Jalen Reagor will be back. Dallas Goedert will be back. Carson Wentz will have some firepower. This is one of those games. It's too important of a game for the Eagles not to bring their A game. So I like the Eagles. And, of course, I told you I'm taking the Raiders. That's our pick with R.J. Bell.
All right. LVR minus 4. Rick, you're up.
All right, here we go. I am also going to take the Ravens. I'll lay the 7. I am going to take the Tom Brady-led Bucks to bounce back. I'll lay the, 5.5?
5.5, yep.
I'll lay the 5.5. And then I will take, I don't care what RJ said, I'm going to take the Green Bay Packers and I'll lay the 13.
13 against the Jacksonville Jaguars. So Baltimore minus 7, Tampa minus 5.5, and Green Bay minus 13 for you. Good luck to all of you.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.